So I'd mentioned that Isaiah, the first 39 chapters, deal with the time leading up to the exile when the people of God finally had their way, which was a life apart from God. And chapter 39 ends with the prophet saying to the king what is going to happen. And then there's an immediate jump to chapter 40 with no actual description of the exile itself. It's almost like the one who finally pulled all that together thought it was just too much to bear, too traumatic to go through once again, because they were living it. And that's where chapter 40 takes up. They've been in exile for 40 years or so, living in Babylon, not being treated particularly well. And in fact, God saw the treatment at the hand of the Babylonians. And so this is too much. I wanted you to suffer, but I didn't want you to suffer that much. So the verse where the prophet says, you've received double for your sins. It's been too much. Sometimes when God uses human means to exercise judgment, the human means don't exercise the same restraint that God would want. And so these words then come as a way of trying to soften the people to the possibility that God would return to Jerusalem and become accessible to them again. That's really what they're looking for. Would God return to Jerusalem, and would he become accessible to them once again? Can I hear that as a person in exile, struggling, suffering, going through a rough season? And we might be thinking, well, why are we talking about exile in this season leading up to Christmas? I mean, isn't that the most wonderful time of the year? How do these things fit together? And they fit together like this. If you think of exile as a time, as a rough time, a time of disruption, a time of disorientation, a time of home not even feeling like home, it didn't even end when the Judeans returned from Babylon and repopulated Jerusalem, because they didn't repopulate it as autonomous people. They were still under the authority of others. And in fact, N.T. Wright, the New Testament scholar, says that you can understand the Judean anticipation of Jesus and what their expectations were of him if you look at exile as the framework that people were looking at all of that through. So even though they were living in their land, they were under Roman occupation. They were paying taxes to Caesar. They weren't free. And so they saw in Jesus their hope of being set free from that. And in fact, even John the Baptist sees his role as preparing the way for Jesus. And so we find that in Jesus, the promises of Isaiah chapter 40 are fulfilled. That God does come to Jerusalem again, but in and as Jesus. That God does become accessible again, but in and through the person of Jesus. That God is glorified, lifted up and glorified again in Jerusalem, but not quite in the way that they had in mind. So exile is absolutely an appropriate theme for us to be looking at in this season, in any year. I think it's especially relevant this year. This is the first year in a while that we have not offered a Christmas season or an Advent season service that we call either Blue Christmas or The Longest Night. The Longest Night being December 21st. And then we changed the name to Blue Christmas to move us off December 21st is always the night we offered it. And the idea was that in this most wonderful time of year when everyone is festive and celebrating, or it seems like that, there would always be some among us who were struggling, some kind of loss or some kind of hard season in their lives. And we would offer this service as a means of creating kind of sanctuary where it was okay to be in the time of struggle, to be in a season of exile, if you were. Well, many months ago, as we were planning our services, we said, you know, rather than doing a Blue Christmas or a Longest Night service this year, let's do a healing service on Sunday morning, and we'll do it on the Sunday when we have that passage from Isaiah. And there was no way for us to know when we planned this just how prominent the feelings of exile would be in our world right now. It used to be that if you were in this sense of Blue Christmas, it was, well, everybody around me is celebrating. There's something wrong with me. But do you see a lot of celebrating around you right now? I don't mean at this precise moment, but I mean there's a weight, there's a heaviness. I don't know if there's a lot of celebrating going on at all. And yet there is a sense of we wish there were. We would like there to be. We think if God had his way, we would be. And so there's a sense of seasonal exile even while we're in it. Beyond that, it's not just limited to seasons. George Barna founded a research organization that studies the religious behavior of the American people. And the organization is still called the Barna Group, although David Kinnaman is now the president. And they publish research regularly. And this is their take on, you know, kind of where things are right now for our culture. And tell me if this doesn't sound like exile to you. People are lonelier, more distracted, and more tethered to their screens and searching for meaningful lives. Does that sound descriptive? Does it sound like disorientation, dislocation, maybe even exile? On Monday morning, we have our staff meetings. This past Monday, not far into our meeting, we found out that the University of Chicago was shut down due to what was considered a viable threat of violence against the university. And of course, Lutheran School of Theology, where all five of us attended, is right across the street from University of Chicago. So that was shut down, as well as I think all the seminaries in Hyde Park. So we were just kind of getting our heads around that, and I got a text from Joy that that Barrington High School was locked down because there was a gun with one of the students in the building. And thankfully, that was resolved very, very effectively. Everyone did their part, but it was profoundly unsettling for many of us. Personally, I've got a daughter who's been studying in Luxembourg this fall. And Luxembourg is, you know, for those of you who are geographically challenged like me, it's right in between two of the countries you're not supposed to travel in right now, France and Belgium. And then our son was to leave on Tuesday to go spend 3 months in a third world country. And I didn't think when I woke up on Monday morning that my child I needed to worry about was the one who was, you know, close to home. Do you get a sense of exile as parents? Home is not our home. Yeah. And how about for kids? I know I've talked about this before. I grew up in a time when it was the height of the Cold War. And so we had drills in school where we were to hide under the desks in case the Soviet Union decided to launch a nuclear attack. It's okay to laugh. I mean, don't think the desks were going to do a whole lot of good. And so as kids, as we were in this drill, we had the sense of this isn't real. A desk isn't going to help us against a nuke. And of what strategic value is Northbrook, Illinois, to the Soviet Union, even if they decided to launch? So we went through the motions, but didn't really consider it a viable threat. That's not true for our kids now. Yeah. Now our kids don't hear, get under the desk in case the Soviets launch a missile. They say, they hear from their teacher, I'm going to do whatever it takes to protect you. Are any of you willing to help? Feel the weight of that. Feel the weight of that. I went on Friday night to an event at the Garlands for a Samaritan Counseling Center. And Samaritans, Samaritan is an interfaith counseling service in Barrington. It's one of many across the country. They do terrific work. And among the things I learned that night were that counseling hours in 2015 were 25% higher than they were in 2014. Now, that's encouraging. It means that people have access to help and they're seeking it, but it also means that they're needing it. And it's forecast to go up another 25% in 2016 over 2015. Now, most of us, you know, if our business went up 25% in a year, we'd be thrilled. And it is thrilling to be able to offer the help, but it's somewhat sobering to require it. And the statistic that I heard that night that was most gripping to me was that of all the hours counseled in 2015, 40% of them were to young people 17 and younger. 40% of all the counseling hours in this and surrounding communities. Now, I mean, this is not a bad place to grow up. But 40% of the counseling hours were to young people, typically for anxiety, depression, addiction, which is just an ill-advised way of trying to deal with anxiety or depression. So do you have the sense that our young people are growing up in a season of exile? Do you have that sense? I certainly do. Certainly do. This is affecting us personally as a family this year. My mother-in-law is coming to live with us on Wednesday this week. And I tell people this, and they say, how long is she staying? I say, well, that's kind of between her and God. But she can't live on her own anymore, and of all of her kids, Joy's the only one with a bedroom on the first floor. So, I mean, it makes sense for her to come. So that was our bedroom. Now it's hers. And now we're in the bedroom that was my older daughter's, who's coming back from Luxembourg on Saturday. And she's going to move into her brother's room, who's now in Costa Rica. And our younger daughter locks her door because she's afraid we're going to send her into the basement. And the cats are just looking around. So, you know, for us it's unsettling, but we're grateful to have the space to be able to do it. Much more of an exilic experience for my mother-in-law, who's been a Jersey girl her whole life, and now she's moving four states away, you know, presumably for the rest of her life. Some of you know this. My father was hospitalized 4 weeks ago. And he spent 5 nights in the hospital, and in the last 3 weeks he's been in a skilled nursing facility trying to get his functioning back to where he could live more or less on his own again. And that's now not looking likely to happen. It's been really hard to see that he's not getting back the functioning that we had all hoped. And, you know, here's a guy who grew up on a farm, and we never had dogs growing up because he couldn't bear the thought of keeping a dog locked up in a house. And now his world is getting progressively smaller in every way. Do you think he's experiencing a sense of exile this season? And yet we're grateful that he's alive. Yesterday morning we had a memorial service here for Bob Kenny. Bob and his wife Norma joined Atonement in 1970. And some of you remember that Norma died just last spring. So visiting Bob in their home after Norma had died, it didn't feel like their home anymore. And now their three sons are going to experience the holidays for the first time without either parent. You get a sense of exile there, I'm quite sure. Earlier this fall, Andrea Fontas' mother, Pat Kelly, died. Andrea and Ted had been taking care of her in their home and then in a condo that they had bought for her for many, many years. And yet that had become their life, the life that they were used to. And so now there's a sense of disorientation, another rough spot. And then yesterday morning, as I was preparing to come over here for Bob's service, I got a call from Sam Kramer. Many of you know Sam and Jenny. Jenny's father died yesterday morning with no expectation or advance notice. Mike and Mary have been here many, many times. I mean, they would look familiar to many of you. They're active in their church, St. Philip in Glenview, but the pastor's out of town this weekend, and so I went to Mary's home, and for all the years I've known Mike and Mary, I've never been to their home before, and yet, you know, to be in there for the first time after Mike's death, I mean, he lit up every room, and there was already a sense of exile because he's not going to light those rooms up anymore. So do you have an idea of why exile is a right theme for this season and certainly for this time in our lives? And aren't you glad we're not trying to just do this on a Sunday night with a handful of us? So how do we root our lives? Where do we ground ourselves? Do we ground our lives in our health and well-being and friends and family and career and economy and political stability? I mean, these are all good things. These are all God-given things. But friends, you know they're not sufficient to ground our lives because they're too fragile. There is only one way of totally transcending all that the world throws our way, and that is to ground and root our lives in God Himself. In God Himself. And so we can cry out like the prophet. In the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord. In the wilderness, in the rough season, in the time of disorientation, even dislocation. Sometimes that is when we are most open to the hand of God in our lives. And so we're going to have now a time of prayer for healing. You're going to be invited to come forward on your own with a friend, with a family member or more. And to bring before God those places in your lives that are rough, that are disorienting. And know that even as you do that, you begin to prepare the way for God to work in your life. Amen.